Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. This episode is a bit of a side quest, I guess. It wasn't originally in an outline for what I wanted to talk about as it regards Nutcracker Syndrome, but I'm actually realizing it is extremely pertinent. I want to talk about your hormones. Before jumping into this, I am a person that has female reproductive parts. I did have a uterus, not anymore. Y'all know that story. I also don't have a left ovary, but I do have my right ovary, and I got all the other little tidbitty things that come along with that, meaning that I have higher levels of estrogen than I do testosterone, et cetera, et cetera. I've learned a lot about hormones on this path, and I'm gonna throw this out there. From the jump, that I, and this is intuitively, I very much am somebody who knows my body. I grew up a competitive athlete. I do a lot of somatic therapy. So I'm not necessarily saying, like, oh, my intuition trumps science, but I am somebody who very much, I want to talk about not just my intuition, but also how science actually aligns with it. Conversations I've had I have two gynecologists. I have Dr. Muldoon. Y'all have heard about her. Love her to death. Only can say good things about her. But I also have another gynecologist that is a hormone specialist. And there is a difference. There is a major difference. So I want to talk about that. But I wanted to start out by saying I have female reproductive parts. So if you are a male listening to this, I do think this episode can be very beneficial for you. I am going to be talking about estradiol. I will be talking about testosterone. I'll be talking heavily about testosterone. It obviously affects women a little bit different than it does men. So women, obviously, we do have testosterone and we do need testosterone, but we do not need it to the extent that men do, for their own reproductive health, etc. So the reason why I had a gynecology appointment yesterday with my hormone specialist. So this is fresh on my brain. Again, a bit of a rogue episode, but I do think that this is an alignment. And the reason why, and to circle back to my intuition part, my vascular compressions, the symptoms started almost in tandem with my hormones tanking. And I remember feeling, now, again, I'm a researcher, so I don't want to make a direct correlation here. And I don't even want to make a correlation, let alone try to say that there's a strong effect size. It is suspect, though, because, and the reason why I say I don't want to make a correlation or, talk about causation, any of that, is because could it be that I don't know, is it a chicken or the egg? Could the symptoms have started and then the chronic pain led to spikes in cortisol, which is a hormone itself, that then indirectly could impact your testosterone and estradiol numbers. So that could have happened. Or could it have been that my estrogen and testosterone started to tank, influencing my vascular integrity and the symptoms of the vascular compression started? I don't know. When I look up the research on this, I don't see anything. So again, if you are out there and you're listening to this and you're like, oh baby, let me point you in a direction, please drop a comment, DM me on my socials and put me down that rabbit hole because I love a good rabbit hole, especially when it pertains to like the medical space and understanding my body more and helping other people understand their bodies more. So again, I need to preface that because I don't want to make any claims here that would insinuate a directional, a correlation, a causation, or anything like that. But I do think it's worth speaking about. The reason why I've been working with Dr. Oberly, Dr. Kelly Oberly, at Littleton Gynecology and Wellness. So people that are around the Denver area highly recommend her. Very intelligent, spends a lot of time with you, talks about the science with you, and my nerdy little brain just, nom, 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 I just eat that up. So I went in yesterday and I said, hey, prior to my kidney auto transplant, when all my vascular compression symptoms started, my Mae Thurner, my Nutcracker, My hormones, Dr. Muldoon was like, you know what? I think we also need to leave no stone unturned. So let me send you on your way to vascular for them to see if you have these compressions. But I'm also going to refer you to a hormone specialist, which I want to say, do not assume that every gynecologist, every GYN that you see, or for men, if it's a urologist, your primary care, that they're necessarily going to know how to run a full panel for you when it comes to hormones. And this is another reason why I love Dr. Muldoon so much. I do remember she ran like my estradiol numbers, but she was like, hey, this is not, we don't do full panels here. I also, per the license that she has, she's like, we can't in this office prescribe testosterone. So she referred me to another gynecologist. Chef's kiss. Lovely. I love it when people know what their lane is and they also refer you to people so that you can go get more data, more answers. So I go to Dr. Oberle's office. I run a full panel. So it's full thyroid panel, T3, T4, TSH. I think there was something else. Full testosterone panel of testosterone free, all the, bioavailable, all those different things, my estradiol, my FSH. Bunch of other stuff thrown in there. That was awesome because it gives you a better overall snapshot. But for us that have the female anatomy, we also understand that our hormones are crazy. So even if you go in on a specific day, depending on the time of day, you're just a blood test is just a snapshot of time. And so something I would suggest for you all. I've done it. Another friend in the Nutcracker community put me onto this. I have been doing fertility testing for 2 months, which is you pee into a cup. It is a smidgy expensive to do. I wouldn't say too incredibly expensive. I don't want to like make it out like I'm a professor. They don't pay us a lot, just so y'all know. But it was, I decided that I did want to go that route, pay out of pocket to do a minimum of 2 months. I don't have a uterus, so I can't. I've lost track. I don't know when. I kind of understand maybe when I'm ovulating. I kind of track it with my moods, but I'm just shooting in the dark most of the time and not really sure. So I went and started doing these fertility testing where you pee in a cup every day and it's a whole process. It's really easy. The program that I use or the app or whatever it's called, Anito, I guess. I don't know how you some of these names are just out of control. Anito, I think. Initio is the name of it. And you basically pee into a little cup, put the stick in there for 15 seconds, and then you plug it. There's a thing for your phone that you can plug it in, it'll scan it. Something about urine tests, though, is the efficacy of them is not as good as a blood test. But for me, what I wanted to do is to track my cycles. And when I went in Dr. Oberle today, the chart was awesome because we were able to see where she was like, this is the day, this is right in your cycle where I think it would be best for you to schedule to have your labs done. And thankfully, it was super convenient because yesterday she was like, she said, today's actually the day that I would suggest you get your blood work done. So if you have a little bit more time and you can stick around, let me send this into the lab and we'll bring you back and we'll test your FSH and your estradiol because I'm around that day three of my period. Not my period, sorry, day three of the cycle. So like kind of starting over. So if you're somebody out there, I know a lot of people have said, me too, I don't have a uterus, I lost it because of these vascular compressions. It doesn't have to be this app. My friend that's also diagnosed with Nutcracker, she did her due diligence, did the research, and I just believed her. I was like, work smarter, not harder. I'm just going to go with what she's done. It captures the most, it captures the E3G, which is a type of estradiol, your LH, your PDG, which I'll be honest with you, I have no fucking clue what that is, but seems cool. And then it captures your FSH number. And so that you get that every day. There's also an option to test your basal body temperature, I think that's what it's called. I don't do that. I'm not trying to, I can't have kids. I was just doing this to track my cycles. I was not doing this to get pregnant, obviously. So that is something I want to empower you all to think about because this has actually been really lovely for me to do. And what it made me think is, again, I'm 3.5 months post-op from my kidney auto transplant. So when I was speaking to my friend about this, and she was telling me she was doing it for herself, I was like, actually, that's brilliant. I need to do it for me. Because every gynecologist and hormone specialist, when you go in, like, I remember my first estradiol number was 128. And she kept saying, this is good, blah, blah. Which I agree with, but we have no idea where I was at in my cycle because I don't have a uterus. So I can't say, oh, I started my period then, so we could make like an educated guess. It was just like, well, if the 128 is here, then that would actually be too high. But if it's here, it's too low. And I mean, if you're listening to this, you're like, girl, I get it. It's like a, just to me, trying to capture your hormone numbers is like trying to find a fart in the wind. I don't know how else to put it. It's crazy. So I went into Dr. Oberly yesterday and I was like, hey, Dr. Oberly, a couple things. So what I want to empower you with today is A, I wanted to tell you about that app. So if you want to go and purchase the device, I want to say it was like $100-something, just kind of like outright. And then you have to pay an extra like 50 for another like 15 test strips. Again, a little bit expensive. I knew I was going to do it acutely. So I'm actually coming up to the end and I'm not going to keep doing it. I just wanted to prepare for this appointment with Dr. Oberly so we had enough data to make the best guess we could on when to capture my numbers. So I asked her, I said, can you, or is there somebody you can refer me to that can speak toward the relationship between hormones and vascular integrity, the vascular system? That is a great a question for you to ask your gynecologist, your urologist, whoever. Dr. Oberly already knew about my nutcracker. We'd already been speaking about it, but I hadn't specifically gone to her and been like specifically asked her about this. Thankfully, she told me, she spoke to me about it, and she was like, there is definitely a relationship there. What the specific mechanism is, we don't like, they know what it is, but it's when it comes to compressions, for example, there's so little research just on specific compressions alone. I mean, let's be real, there's not even like reliable and valid diagnostic measures for all surgeons to be held accountable to. So when we get into these little specialty niche places, of course, that's probably not there. But she did speak toward, the role of estrogen and testosterone as it regards vascular integrity. And so when your estrogen, for example, starts tanking, and another reason why I thought about doing this episode is when I'm looking at the analytics of this Nutcracker podcast, I am, shout out to all of the very similar people to me, at least age-wise. So if I'm looking at this analytics, which I'm pulling up now so that I'm speaking properly about it. The majority of 44.4% of you all in the audience are between the age of 35 and 44. Mostly female. So we're looking at, of the 44.4% that are in the 35 to 44 range, 87% is female. And then we're looking at the next highest is that 45 to 59. So, for those of you that are below the 35 threshold, this is something very much like stick a pin in this and remember this. I myself am 35, just so everybody knows. And then for you all that are 35 and above, this is something I would actively tell you to go and explore. Even those at early 30s, my hormones started tanking around like 31, 32. I started my period just as a baseline when I was 9 years old. A lot of factors probably went into that. So just, your body, your menstrual story, things like that. Premenopause, so when it comes to the menopausal journey, which no woman with female reproductive system, it can escape this, unfortunately. There are three phases. There's premenopause, perimenopause, and menopause itself, and then obviously postmenopause. When you start getting into the premenopausal stage, which I was diagnosed as at the age of, I was 34, so this was last year, and I was kind of shocked. My FSH numbers were starting to rise, and your FSH has a direct relationship with your ovary. The FSH is in your brain. Where? I don't freaking know. But just think about your FSH, fun little neuron hanging out in the brain. When you start transitioning into the menopausal system, if you will, the FSH, what's happening is your ovary isn't being as efficient to pump out estrogen. So the FSH starts coming online and it's having to get louder and louder and louder. Think about it like yelling at the ovary, being like, listen, hello, knock, knock, you need to do your job. So when your FSH starts to increase, it's insinuating that you are getting into that menopausal system. And how high the FSH will depend on which phase of the system you're in. So pre, peri, or menopause, or post. So my numbers, I was throwing like an 8.5, 9.5, which was indicative of premenopausal. I'll be honest with you, I was a little sad about this, right? To be starting the menopause journey so soon. Some people have come back to say, well, I've heard that losing your uterus and your uterus will throw you into menopause. That is not a one size fits all. That's not necessarily, again, a direct correlation. We can't even talk about effect size there, because there's some people who have lost their uterus and other things, maybe one ovary, maybe both. HRT could be involved, obviously. I say all this to say there's a lot of nuances. So for me, I did lose my uterus, my left ovary. I do think that did throw my hormones into a little bit of a chaotic system. Quite frankly, I know my body. My right ovary was pissed that she now has to do all the work. Who wouldn't be, right? Like, I mean, they come in and they fire everyone, and you're told you have to do the job of two people now, and you're not getting an increase in pay. Who's not going to be mad? So I don't blame her. She threw a couple ovarian cysts. She was having a temper tantrum. We worked through it. What I will say is this: prior to my post, prior to my kidney auto transplant, my hormones were all over the place. I felt like, even though my estradiol numbers seemed to be steady, we didn't see an issue there. My FSH was starting to get a little high. I was in premenopausal. My testosterone was tanko. It was very low. So we decided, and my thyroid was very low. I have what's known as low T3 syndrome. So I wasn't diagnosed with hyper or hypothyroidism, but almost this little like blip in the system, where my T3, my body has a doesn't synthesize something well as it regards T3. So what we did prior to my kidney auto transplant is we started supplementing with testosterone. At the time, I started doing pellets because it was when you're in the medical chaos, two things. A, I was able to afford it. So if I want to bring kind of classism into this because pellets are not covered by insurance, so that you're paying out of pocket. And for me, I was paying $399 every 3 to 4 months, depending upon how fast or not your body, just eats up that testosterone. And I also started a thyroid medication. That actually helped me a lot. So something I want to bring to especially women's attention as it regards testosterone is that there's a mixed bag of emotions with it. There's some gynecologists that are, as it pertains to pellets. For me, I do kind of feel this. It's like, even they might give you, I was doing 100 milligrams and then I bumped up to 125 right prior to surgery because testosterone helps with the healing process. But I could tell that it was affecting my heart some. And for some of us people out there, we have POTS-like symptoms, right? So speaking to your hormone specialist about if you have low testosterone and you want to supplement with testosterone, which I'm actively taking testosterone. I believe in it. I think it's great. It does have a relationship with just the endovascular system integrity, your arteries, things of that nature. I can't necessarily go into the specific mechanisms of it. With that being said, make sure that you do talk about the direct relationship between testosterone as a stimulant. So it does have, if you have too much testosterone, it's going to tax the heart. It could have almost an adverse effect because if you have too low of testosterone, it could lead to depression-like symptoms, anxiety, just overall melancholy type of a mood, which I definitely feel I can. On the pellets, when you start coming to the end, like that end of the 3 months, which I am actually in right now, and it sucks. I can feel myself just like tanking. And then when I go get a re-up, you're like, oh, okay. But speak about that relationship with POTS. How could testosterone affect my POTS-like symptoms? I want to empower you to know what questions to ask so you're going in as armed as you can, because as we all know, sometimes these doctors aren't really looking specifically at your case and they might just prescribe something and then it has an adverse effect on another syndrome that you have. Okay. Because I did know when I did the 125 milligrams, I did that purposefully going into my kidney auto transplant, knowing that testosterone does have a relationship with healing properties. So helping you heal from surgeries and injury and things like that. So I wanted to do a little bit more to give my body just a little bit more zhuzh to help myself heal. And I will be honest, I did see the effects of that. My scar healed amazingly. I just felt like, I mean, I was off all opioids. The only painkillers I was taking was Tylenol here and there 2.5 weeks post-op. Again, I can't say that the direct relationship was to testosterone because I didn't actually do that scientific study to control the variables. It does feel like it did help me though, especially looking at prior surgeries where my body was low testosterone, I wasn't supplementing, and I didn't heal as quickly. But again, there could have been other factors there, nutrition's at play, etc. So when you go in, again, asking them the relationship between how testosterone could affect your heart as it pertains to some other syndromes that you could be diagnosed with, etc. I am a progressive person overall, ideologically. When it comes to medication, I take a conservative approach, meaning I want to start small. Let's start out with the 5 milligrams and then see how that goes. And if I feel if it's not really doing anything, I'll ask to go to the 10 milligrams. That's my approach. That's often been the approach of medical doctors to me, and I personally agree with it. I have a very sensitive body to substances, caffeine, all of these types of things. So I always start smaller and then we'll check in 10 days later or something, and then I'll either ask to up it or not. I also personally like this because it demonstrates to these doctors that I'm not just here for pills. Because you also have to navigate that. That can be intersected by the region of the country that you're in, things of that nature. So I started small with the testosterone, went up a little bit more prior to surgery, realized that was a little too high for me, actually. When I went in yesterday, I said two things. I was like, I don't want to do the pellets because I'm trying to cut back on spending, especially medically. Oh, gosh, I've spent so much the last 2 years on medical stuff. Raise of hands, am I right? Big hugs to us all. So my option, I'm transitioning to the cream. Bioidentical cream. The efficacy there isn't necessarily, it depends on how well your body absorbs testosterone. The average amount of people absorb it pretty well, but as we're not average, if we're getting diagnosed with these vascular compressions that are rare, we're not average people. So we're going to do the first 8 weeks, see, and then retest my testosterone, see where the numbers fall. And from there, either we're starting out conservative at the 5 milligrams. Might bump it up to 10, I think, is what she said. So I want to bring up testosterone and then I'll get back to this estradiol FSH stuff. So the testosterone, something I really want to tread lightly on the word suggest because this is not medical advice. I'm not a medical doctor. But things I've learned on my journey is that testosterone does help with healing. So if I was low in testosterone, I was going in with a deficit to help me heal. So if you go in, get your testosterone tested and it's low, and your medical doctor advises to do some therapy, testosterone therapy, lean in to that conversation and asking the specific questions about, remember, testosterone is a stimulant. So something else my partner has recently also gone in, and something that I didn't actually think about. I myself don't have ADHD, but the conversation was around the use of like Vyvanse, Adderall, things like that. Those are stimulants, right? Well, testosterone is also a stimulant. So prior to the NP prescribing, like they first prescribed the Vyvanse and said, let's nail down what that dosage is, and then in a month we'll come in and then prescribe the testosterone based on what exact dosage of the Vyvanse you need. So that's something else to consider. If you have ADHD, you're on a stimulant there. Asking about that relationship with whatever respective syndrome you have, diagnosis you have that could intersect. And I always, always, always want you to encourage you that whatever your gut feeling is toward, like, you don't need an explanation. You don't need somebody to help you understand it. Your gut feeling is there for a reason. You are a very powerful individual that knows what's right for your body. So much of my navigation on this journey has been me just listening to my gut. My IR, as an example, the IR that I had downplayed Nutcracker syndrome for me pretty heavily. And at first I was like, the May Thurner stent's gonna help, et cetera. And it really did. I'm not mad I got the May Thurner stent. I have not had any complications with it. But I remember 2 weeks I started having my symptoms come back, and I was like, I'm gonna pursue this on my own. Whether they think that I should or not, which it was very much they didn't think I needed it, and that it was the left iliac vein the whole time, and it was just kind of a bit of a magic bullet. And I just was like, something's just telling me I need to go ahead. Even my nutcracker symptoms, the classic ones, were kind of mild, in that 3 to 4 pain scale. But I was like, I would rather start the journey now instead of waiting till I'm at a 7, 8, 9, 10 pain scale, and then the timer starts on when I can get my treatment and in person, right? So I decided to go and pursue that for myself based on my intuition. So it's a lot of things. It's taking the doctor's opinion, intersecting that with your opinion, intersecting that with the research you do on your own, and then deciding what's best for you. So by no means am I saying everybody should run to a hormone specialist and get on testosterone. This is just stuff I've learned on this journey that actually ended up being very helpful for me. So something the testosterone, when I started supplementing with it, did for me, it helped. I wouldn't say tremendously. It did help my fatigue, because low testosterone, all a symptom of that, depression, anxiety, fatigue, brain fog, things of that nature. So it did help my brain fog as well. I also had these vascular compressions, so blood wasn't pumping to my heart properly. So that also was influencing the fatigue and brain fog, but the testosterone came in and helped mitigate it. I felt like me going on testosterone helped carry me as best it could to the finish line of the surgery, and then it helped me heal from the surgery. So that's testosterone. I wanted to talk to you all about that, especially those of us that are in that kind of transitionatory period where we could be going into the menopausal system, that rite of passage that some of us might go into kicking and screaming. I know I am. I would love to say I'm doing it gracefully, but it's not happening. I want to circle back around to estradiol and FSH. Now, again, this is off of my own little hunch. I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm also not stupid. And that's something I've loved Dr. Muldoon has done for me. Because I'll go in and I'll say, yeah, I was looking up vascular system anatomy, as it correlates with the nervous system, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I know I'm not a medical doctor. And Muldoon will always stop me and be like, it's really not hard. Like the stuff you're seeing online, it's what we saw in textbooks. It's not hard. And she's just reminded me again, I was gonna say I respect the medical system. That's a statement. I don't fully respect it, but I do respect people who've gone through a lot of school, especially if they demonstrate that I should respect them because they properly advocate and they have a proper interdisciplinary relationship with the medical system as a whole, understanding the body as a whole system and not just siloed as gynecology, nervous system, vascular. So They have to gain my respect, obviously. But I do respect the fact that they've gone through a lot of schooling, and there are things they know that I don't, and some things that I might not see online and research that they've seen, etc. With that being said, I just started getting this hunch. I go into Dr. Oberly yesterday, 3.5 months post-op from my kidney auto transplant, and I said, "Hey, can you talk to me about the relationship between hormones and vascular integrity?" And that's when she told me, she's like, "Yeah, there's absolutely a relationship. You know, if you have low estrogen numbers, if you're going through menopause cycle, that's absolutely it." The analogy she gave me was like going into an older home with wallpaper. And as the home ages, the wallpaper starts to fray. And it's not a one-to-one direct metaphor. Like, it's not like your vascular system is necessarily fraying like the wallpaper, but you get what I hope you can see the analogy there, though, of the wallpaper itself, as it starts to peel, the glue that's there, that integrity starts to crumble. So you have to go in and do some maintenance. And that's where hormone replacement therapy can come in. That's where the use of collagen and creatines and you can really get into the weeds with it. Again, I'm not a medical specialist. This is more me sharing my lived experience with the psych with the hormone the relationship between hormones and my vascular journey to hopefully empower you all to maybe explore this route for yourself or not. That is 100% in your domain, your agency. So I say, you know, I'm a little suspicious that when we did my estradiol and my FSH numbers prior to the surgery, let's be real, my cortisol was through the roof every day. So much so that I had to go on anti-anxiety meds. Started out middle of the road on a 10 milligram buspirone, which is a non-addictive style of anti-anxiety. And let's also be real, the closer to the surgery got, I was like, "Yo, doc, can I get some of that Klonopin? I'm having nightmares, anxiety's through the roof, I'm breaking out in hives." That was a tremendous help for me. I think anti-anxiety meds can be very, very helpful as a mixed method. I was still meditating, I was still trying to do stretches, and I was getting massages. So I was doing other more somatic body stuff, and I still needed the anti-anxiety, and I love it. Chef's kiss. Going to Dr. Oberly, and I'm like, my cortisol was through the roof. Let's be real. I was on medications, and there's just no telling. My body was really going through the ringer, fight or flight every day, baby. So, could we, and I bring up the app that I referenced at the beginning of this episode, the Inito app, I guess. I don't know if that's proper. And I say, let me show you my 2 months worth of data that I've collected off my urine. And she looks at it and I say, I would love, if you're okay with it, to recapture my estradiol and my FSH numbers and us determine what day I should actually do my labs to capture it. And like I stated, she was like, actually, today would be the perfect day for you to do your FSH and your estradiol. We discussed, is it better to capture the estradiol number specifically at the lowest part of my cycle or at the highest? She deemed the lowest would probably be best because that's really going to help us see. Because when your estrogen is really low, when it's the lowest in your cycle, that lets you know kind of the bottom end threshold. And if it is extremely low, then we can start having the conversation about estradiol's role in the vascular compression space, in the endovascular relationship. But if it's not, if it's looking good, like the lower end of my estradiol numbers is actually therapeutic in and of itself without needing replacement therapy, hormone replacement therapy, then we'll have that discussion. Also, I want to see what my FSH is at the lowest point, because if my FSH is high, when my estradiol at the at, when it's supposed to be at the lowest point, what I'm not 100% convinced of, and the reason why I wanted to do this is I'm not 100% convinced, and again, this could be me kicking and screaming, I'm not 100% convinced that I'm in the menopausal space. Data is your best friend. So I am very much an advocate for data. Again, I'm a researcher. So we have the data prior to my surgery that's not tethered to knowing where I was at in the cycle because I don't have a uterus, et cetera, et cetera. Now that I know this is the day that I captured, this is where my hormones were per the fertility test that I was doing. And then this is the blood test, which has a higher efficacy rating to it than your urine. We can better see where I'm at. And maybe I am, if I am premenopausal, I'll accept it. But at least I feel like something that was a major shift for me post-kidney auto transplant is I did feel like my hormones started to level out. And one of the reasons was because my other systems in my body were now getting proper blood flow to them. So I haven't thrown an ovarian cyst since the surgery, where technically prior I wasn't throwing them, but I was having some ovary problems where I would get some small cysts and they take a lot longer to go away. I haven't been having those anymore. And Dr. Muldoon and Oberly are like, yeah, when blood is a life force, there's a reason why malnourished children don't grow as well. Same thing with the body. If organs are not getting proper blood flow, they are not going to function properly. So again, if I'm now getting proper blood flow and I hormonally feel more even, my testosterone's obviously right now a little low, so we're going to start back up on that therapy. But could my estradiol and FSH numbers be different? And if they are, I don't want to psychologically be accepting the fact that I am in the perimenopausal space when I'm actually not. That has psychological ramifications. So I might be going in, like, as an example, when you get into the perimenopausal space, you start talking about osteoporosis, where your bones are starting to break down, dementia, things like that. So then, talking about nutrition, things of that nature. Obviously, none of those things, like trying to mitigate the effects of osteoporosis and dementia and things like that, is never going to be a bad time to start doing that. But there's a type of mental space that you accept and you adopt when you start getting into the menopausal cycle that I don't have a problem accepting it. So when I say I'm going into this kicking and screaming, acceptance isn't really the problem per se. I just want to 100% know that I did my due diligence, had the data that does support, yes, you are premenopausal, maybe even peri. I don't know. These numbers could come back and be higher FSH numbers than they were prior. We'll deal with it. The biggest thing, if you boil it down, is that when you're going through chronic pain and not just the stress, the mental stress, the physical stress of chronic pain, but the psychological stress of it, the fight or flight, the high cortisol, you name it, your adrenals on overdrive. I mean, the list goes on and on. How does that not have an impact on your hormones? How does that not have an impact on every single other system in your body? So for me, I'm like, okay, now that I am af post, let's see where the cards fall. That's a lot of my journey right now. Let's see where the cards are falling. And if there are more stones I need to unturn, if there's other therapies I need to do, whether that be medicinal therapies, using medicines, hormones, or seeing other doctors, whatever, let's do that. My hope, and again, this was, like I said, a bit of a rogue episode where I was like, let's chat about hormones, and maybe there's others of you out there going, oh my gosh, me too. I felt like there was also, as my hormones started to tank, my vascular system symptoms started to arise. Again, chicken or the egg? The vascular symptoms started and that affected the hormones dropping, or could it have been the hormones dropping that affected the vascular symptoms? I don't know. Every single day, I'm like, I should go to medical school and research this myself. And then I realize how long that would take. And I'm like, yeah, nah, not doing that. But these are just good conversations. My hope in recording this episode is to empower you to have these conversations with your doctors. I approached them very much like with Dr. Oberly yesterday. I said, and to repeat a question I already wanted to empower you all. to ask, can you speak to the relationship between hormones and the vascular system, specifically vascular compressions? And if not, do you know another doctor that can? And so I wasn't necessarily downplaying her. She went in and spoke very eloquently and was very talked to me for a while about it. But it's okay if they don't. It's just a matter of can they help you? Or if they don't know somebody, is there something they would recommend? Like, how would they recommend you go about finding a doctor like that? Is there a specific medical term that you could be looking into? Like, is endovascular the term you should be? Like, specialty endovascular hormone specialist. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. This is me being like almost trying to help you with that brainstorming process that these. When you go in, they might not know the answer, but if you can approach them to say, can you help me find somebody who can? A good doctor, and I want to circle back around to a previous episode that I recorded. I believe it was episode 3, where I, the one, let me see here, episode 3, nope, episode 4, what questions to ask your doctor. Those specific questions, the two major ones we're asking when you vet doctors, what's your interdisciplinary relationship like with other systems within the medical community, and what's your advocacy like for patients? Those two things will, I have asked that of all my doctors, and so I keep seeing them because I approve of their answer. Those things continue to come up because then when I ask the question of, can you speak to the relationship between hormones and the vascular system? And if not, can you refer me? If they said, absolutely, I have an interdisciplinary approach and I advocate for my patients till death do us part, that comes out in that question because then they say, they either are like, oh, yes, I can either speak to it, or let me find out for you, or let me empower you with the ways that you can go and find somebody that meets your needs. So I'm hoping that this episode kind of gets your wheels churning a bit. My specific working theory in my body, I've spoken to a couple other people in the vascular compression space about this, is that I feel my vascular compressions are more of a, they are related with hormones, that my hormones started to tank. That's when I started seeing the symptoms come up. Sure, maybe I was genetically born to this anatomical predisposition to vascular compressions. I know there's other working theories out there, and maybe it's not actually a working theory. Maybe it's an actual bona fide theory. I haven't looked specifically into the research about the relationship between long COVID and vascular compressions. I have not had long COVID, so or I don't know. Maybe I'm in the throes of long COVID now. Who freaking knows? So and that's another frustrating thing. People are always like, how do you get this? What is it? I'm like, we don't know. We don't know half the stuff. So some of the reason with these episodes, I'm throwing my lived experience out there and wanting to empower you all is because of how little we know. And if my experience can help you even know that there's another stone that you could investigate, then, and if that feels right for you, then investigate it in the best way that you know how. So again, keeping the thought, having the conversations about estradiol, about FSH, about testosterone. Kyle has some upcoming surgeries of his own, and his doctor also saying, so I speak to this for the males in the on this podcast. His doctors were like, yeah, testosterone, actually getting on this cream or doing X, Y, and Z is actually going to help with your recovery for the specific surgery that you have coming up. And I loved hearing that same narrative being communicated to him separately to me because it was helping me be like, oh, okay, there's some validity and reliability there. I mean, obviously, I believe Dr. Overly in and of herself, but it's just nice having those things affirmed in another situation that's not tethered to your own. I would love if other people have your own thoughts about hormones, want to drop them in the comments. Any questions, obviously, reach out with those. I do hope, as always, that this was a very helpful episode. And as I end all episodes, I would love, let's just ground ourselves. I want to invite you to take that deep breath in through your nose, feeling the life force of this oxygen And then slowly exhaling, more slowly than you inhale, just helping bring yourself into that parasympathetic rest and digest space. And another deep inhale. Maybe even hold it at the top for just a second and slow exhale, bringing yourself back grounded. Keeping with that pace if you need it. As you transition into whatever's next with your day, I always invite you to the next episode. But I hope that whatever is next with your day, that you take a moment to just remind yourself of how proud you are of yourself for showing up in either the major or the minor ways for yourself today. And maybe that was even just listening to this episode. I'm happy to be here with you. I am sending you the biggest virtual hugs.